The world went to hell around the year 2000, which is why Adam and Chad live less than 2000. Like and subscribe on your favorite podcast app and continue the conversation on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you're cool enough, join the show on Patreon for exclusive bonus content, specials, and early access to a longer, uncensored, less than 2000 experience. And now, less than 2000 with Adam Wintz and Chad Bischoff.
Less than 2000. Now part of the Greenlit Podcast Network.
Adam, you've known me a long time.
I think that's pretty well established by now. Yes.
Oh, really? I get, yes. Season two, this far in, lifelong friends, that whole thing. Yeah. Okay. Right. So as my lifelong friend, you know that you probably could speak for me if somebody said, who's Chad's favorite stand-up comedian? You probably instinctually would say Eddie Murphy, right?
I would say that, yes.
Okay. I don't want to speak for you, just kind of.
Well, you said, would I speak for you? So yes, if I had to hazard, I would say, you know, it's either that or Gallagher.
We'll have to do a whole other episode on Gallagher because Gallagher. He literally made a career out of smashing like fruit in the audience and stuff. Yes. And that in and of itself was awesome as a kid.
Yes.
Like I want to be able to make that mess. Yeah, exactly. So love Eddie Murphy, love his movies. You know, it was so great to see him now, what, 5-8 years ago at SNL's thing when he finally came out and they did the standing ovation at the 40-year anniversary mark.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. I used to listen to Delirious and Raw all the time. I almost cursed there because we're doing Eddie Murphy and I have a feeling there might be a few extra F-bombs to bleep in this particular episode.
Yeah, let's warn the audience. This is probably a more racy language episode.
However, now here's what I want to say. I did go back and I watched Delirious. Okay. I watched that 1983, then went straight into Raw 87, right?
Yep.
Hadn't seen it in forever. Mm-hmm. And sitting down and watching it, I realized that Eddie Murphy and his stand-up completely minimized women, portrayed men as completely dumb, women are complete objects, none of it holds up to today. He literally talks absolute crap on all kinds of racial issues and all of that kind of stuff. And I was sitting there like almost mouth open. And then I got to thinking about an article I read a long time ago. People who curse are honest. So Eddie Murphy, in a bizarre way, as crude as it is, as much as it doesn't hold up, he makes fun of his own kind. He makes fun of white people like in the most amazing way. I'm just going to come right out and say his white guy impression is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But even though he literally talks trash on everything, there's a level of kind of like, I don't know, does he get a pass? I kind of think he gets a pass. Even though there's things you would never say today. You could never get away with a ton of the shit that he's saying. There is a still level of, underneath it all, a level of truth in the comedy.
Oof. Man, oh man. That's a different track than I thought you were taking. You were setting me up because I thought, of course he's going to go to, it was my favorite comedy and I listened to it all the time, but it's been many, many years and I just listened to it recently to get ready for this. And I was shocked by how offensive it was and dated. And you said all those things, but then you went and said, you know, there's a lot of truth to it. I think I gotta say I disagree. I have to say, and but this is going to be an interesting exercise because it's like the world is different than when we watched it together. I mean, you realize when we first watched this together, when you were visiting Arizona, that was like 2003 or 4, man. We are coming up on almost 20 years since we watched it, and it was dated at the time. And now the world is that much, like, especially in the last 5 years or so, like, the PC, everything. we knew it was offensive and dated at the time. Like,
correct.
But then for me to see, like, a member of a repressed minority group then single out another repressed minority group and make jokes at their expense, it seemed to me like, look, you are contributing to marginalizing these groups. You are, like, in 1983, gay people didn't have a voice at all. Like,
no.
And so for him to say the FAG word over and over and over and over again and make jokes at their expense, I don't know, it did not sit well with me. It was a hard pill to swallow. It was really, really cringe in a way that it wasn't 17 years ago.
Let me back up and state one thing. Like, there's two things to the word honest that I want to bring up and make absolutely clear, okay? I came up with that concept more when listening to Raw than Delirious, because we have to divide Delirious and Raw, because number one, Delirious, going back, it doesn't hold a candle to Raw. Raw, from the minute it opens, you're like, this is a way better show. This is way better stand-up. This is way better everything. You know, he's better. It's better written, better prepared, better everything.
Yeah.
But I also didn't mean that his whole thing was honest. If you looked beneath some of what he was saying, he was stating that there was a problem. He was doing it in a funny way, even in Delirious. When he was making fun of Asian culture, you know, with the eye thing and
yeah,
is horribly offensive. He then literally calls it out and says he feels so bad because they are oppressed as a race and called out race in the stand-up as being a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by a level of truth was he doesn't actually think women are objects. He doesn't actually think, he drives the comedy in the most offensive way, but then spins it back. You know, especially in Raw, when he's going down this whole, like, I can't even say any of the stuff that's in his thing. I can't even say it. But he's using the P word as if that literally means a woman. And he's sitting here talking about how, you know, your man does this and you, and all of a sudden, and making it seem like the women are trivial, but then flips it around and basically says, you guys are the dumb ones.
Mm-hmm.
But he did bring it back full circle. And that's what I mean by honest. Not that he's making fun. There was nothing redeeming about anything dealing in any of the gay jokes. And I found that to be
Raw. Like, he came back to it in Raw and, like, didn't apologize.
No, made it
like,
worse.
It was like, you know, a whole bunch of F words are coming after me. Like, they're out for me. Oh, what are they going to do? They're going to be on the back of their car going, wee, wee. Like he almost did apologize to women. He almost did apologize. He made those points in every regard except gay people.
Yeah.
He was very, very hard on them in both stand-ups. Like,
in both stand-ups. So I want to be clear that there was, I just, when I used the word honest, that I really wanted to dive a little bit deeper into what that meaning was before this turns into a soundbite of something horrible.
He's speaking, what you're saying in there is like he's speaking sort of truths by using crass comedy, and he's like taking it to a deeper level when you're not even aware of it. How old do you think he was when he did Delirious in 1983?
He was 22, wasn't he?
He was 22. You are so right. Like, he was younger than when you and I watched it for the first time. And it's funny to me thinking, like, he seems like a full grown man. First of all, we have to just point out from the get go, Eddie Murphy is an incredibly talented comedian. Like,
totally.
I didn't really appreciate how good he was until I saw these stand-ups, because I just thought of him as Nutty Professor. And like, look, by the late 90s, he was past his prime by that point. Like, we didn't grow up watching early 80s SNL. Okay. We grew up watching early 90s SNL. So we missed how big of a deal he was. And most of the movies he was in, Trading Places, 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cop, all of those movies were like way too old. Like we weren't old enough to watch those movies. So I missed his prime. It wasn't until I saw this stuff in college that I was like, holy shit. He is so insanely talented. Oh, and yeah. His impressions, my God. Like, that is what jumps out at me most. His impressions, his voices, the white man voice, the black man voice. You know, Michael
even
Jackson,
his music.
Mr.
Even
T.
His music impressions are amazing.
He can sing like James Brown. Hey! Ha! You know?
That's, and then he goes, "That's a hey, we can hey, believe it or not, there's something clean we can say about any stand up on this." That's it. He goes, "That's actually a lyric." I can't even do it. It was almost a cough. That's a real James Brown lyric right there.
And what he's singing like Michael Jackson, and I learned, and he's like actually singing, and it's like, wow, he's got a voice,
motherfucker. Can sing
like yeah. And he's like, when he does the Italian voice, when he's like making fun of white people who've seen Rocky, so broad, so talented, like and of course, like, what, here's what really blows me away about Delirious was 83. It was really, really early in his career. At that point, all he had was SNL starting in 1980, and we cannot understate how big of a deal he was on SNL. He was the only reason the SNL made it to the mid to late 80s. Totally. It is dead. Before they got Carvey and Hartman, like, it wouldn't have survived the 80s without...
No, it wouldn't have. I mean, because you had the original cast. I mean, what, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd.
It was actually started in season two, but yeah.
But I mean, all the Aykroyd, early, Chevy. The very early years in the 70s were amazing. And it did until... Eddie Murphy's what kept it going. Without that, you don't get to the 90s, which in my mind is the tide for first place of best Saturday Night Live of all time.
Absolutely. And he, I mean, he did the Gumby, he did Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. He was so effing good on that show. But he only had two movies at that time. He had 48 Hours in 1982, and he had Trading Places in 1983. That was it. That was his career before Delirious. So, you know, he was still on his way up here. And my God, what an amazing show. Like, I actually really like Delirious. Like, I know you like Raw a lot more, but I like Delirious a lot. I think it's got great material.
Hey, Lassie, what are you doing here? Timmy's in a well. Sequelcast 2 and Friends is a podcast looking at movies in a franchise, one film at a time, like Harry Potter, Hellraiser, and The Hobbit. And sometimes the hosts talk about video games and TV as well. And now it's part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. Oh, Lassie, we don't need to rescue Timmy. He likes the well enough, I guess. Darth Vader is Luke's father. Lassie, I told you to lay off the spoilers.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Dunn, and I'm inviting you to listen to Our 3 Cents, a weekly podcast where myself and two of my very best gaming chums are counting down our top 100 favourite video games of all time. For all the episodes and information, check out our website, www.our3cents.co.uk.
Hi there. Do you love stories that start out ordinary, but with the turn of a universe become unforgettable, life-changing moments? So do I. I'm Ruru Sig, and I'm inviting you to the Story Chaser podcast. Join the adventure, and I promise that you will laugh, cry, and feel inspired when you listen to my narrative essays. Click the link in the notes and listen to the Story Chaser podcast, where great stories are told well.
When you think about it, you're like, wow. I mean, it really was like, yeah, we'll have fun. We're going to talk a lot of shit. We're going to say a lot of, we're going to curse, you know, mm-hmm. but there was more to it But it really took listening to the whole set again mm-hmm. to go through my own rise and fall of cringeworthy, like, how am I listening to this? You know, like, to then getting to the other side of that, too.
Obviously, Richard Pryor is number one. I mean, starting with the 70s. And the things that he said in the 70s and early 80s with the race stuff was shocking at the time. Like, Richard Pryor pushed the envelope in ways that you and I can't even imagine. Like, you and I would listen to Richard Pryor right now and not really be shocked by it. Then you've got Eddie Murphy come along in the 80s, who was heavily inspired by Richard Pryor. Like, it talks about being inspired by Richard Pryor.
He talks about it in the stand-up, yeah.
Exactly. And then takes it the next level. And then you get to what I think is the next evolution of that, Chris Rock in the 90s. And he had two stand-up specials in the 90s. And one of them's Bring the Pain. And that was the all-time classic, probably my favorite individual set of any stand-up comedian was that huge, groundbreaking. But again, at the time, it was extremely shocking and pushing the envelope. Comedy is always offensive. Like, good comedy is cutting edge. My favorite stand-up comedian, Bill Hicks, like, offended religious people all the time. Drugs, yeah. Anti-government stuff. Really, like, almost a preacher more than a stand-up comedian.
Totally.
So good comedy is offensive, necessarily. And it is dated because they're talking about specific things at a specific time.
Well, because
for whatever reason...
Yeah, because you can't be a great comedian without feeding off of the societal issues going on at the moment, period.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, or personal feelings. And guess what? What do we all have in common? We eat, sleep. Mm-hmm. That's it. I mean, if you really boil it down, that's what humans do, right? So you either have to be relevant to what's happening right now in society or be dealing with something that everybody universally loves, like to f***, like Eddie Murphy says. So that's going to make the best comedy. Yeah. And that brings it back to that sort of like that honesty thing. Like comedians say the things that we sometimes think.
I think your point is extremely well made. I mean, he's a product. All of good stand-up comedy is a product of the time. There's a reason why Richard Pryor, as brilliant as it is, doesn't necessarily resonate with you and I the way it would our parents.
Yeah.
It is a very specific moment and time. And in that sense, I mean, Eddie Murphy's a genius because he completely encapsulated the confusion about AIDS, the gay people do being marginalized and not being prominent to like somebody speaking out against it or like, you know, nobody knew anything about it.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was actually like very much, he does get a pass. He gets a pass from the sense that he was doing comedy about, like you said, a lot of people thought these things. It was a product of its time. If he was still doing that now, absolutely not. He should be f***ing canceled.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I'm excited to see what he comes out and does next. You know, what's his stand-up comeback going to be?
I hope he has a 5-minute, 10-minute run on this type of topic.
He did. If you notice, he did that even from Delirious to Raw and then basically still shit on it. Imagine after like 30 years, he comes out, brings up the same thing, and then continues down. I don't think it's going to last long.
You know, he does so much about his dad. He does his dad bit in both Delirious and Raw, and it's basically his closer. I mean, when he started doing his dad in Raw, everybody got a big reaction because, like, he's a character. Because
he did a callback to it. Because in Delirious, it was such a big, the drunk dad thing. You know, like it, you can get the f*** out.
Yeah.
This is my house.
Black men get really, like, throw their weight around. Yeah. My house. And this is after doing, you know, Ricky Ricardo, William Shatner, James Brown, Michael Jackson, Mr. T. He's doing all of these, like, 80s legends, and his the biggest reaction is his dad, which is awesome.
Which is just incredible.
Some of the other dated... I want to just get to a couple dated things about, you know, just dated in a good way, like time capsule way.
Yeah.
In Delirious, he takes a picture of the crowd with a fan's camera, and it's like one of those old square rectangle ones, and it's like, how does the flash work on this? And I'm just thinking of like the flash. Does this take a long time? And I'm like, the 80s. You know, of course, this is the one where he comes out and says, anybody have cable?
Oh, yes, I had that written down. Y'all got cable? Cable Al was so new that in Delirious, he called it out because he wasn't sure how many people had cable.
Right. It's like, it's so, you know, and he talks about Star Trek reruns, the red leather suit. I love the tight. Chad, do you think I could pull that off? Like, I was like, you know, I could find something like that.
Yes. But here's the bigger question. I had one note.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a note. I had one question in my notes. Which leather suit was better? The red one or that dope kind of purple and black one?
Purple and black. So I think the red one in Delirious is cooler looking. Like is just I catchier. The one in Raw is the one that if I had to get one, I think I could pull that one off a little bit better with my Reebok pumps.
Well, since we can't be the same, it's like if we're going as anything as in Halloween, then that means I have to wear the red one with my, I got to shave my chest hair and yes. wear the red one.
That was super tight.
Yeah, like, which I could get away with pants. That.
In the open down to the belly button almost. And like, yeah. he pulled it off, dude. So yeah, my favorite bit of all of them for both of them, just the whole "What have you done for me lately?" The whole half and the yep. crap and the whole way that it all ties together. Like he's got a 20-minute runner on all of those things. Like
oh, yeah.
Johnny Carson's wife getting $150 million.
I love it. I'm pretty certain that when Johnny's wife got married, coming into the relationship, she knew how much money he had.
Exactly. I know we're laughing at these things,
but he also brings it back to this a statement on American culture that it doesn't right. matter where you go to find a spouse. No matter mm-hmm. where you go, you can go to the farthest reaches of the earth. If they you're come right. to America where we're free, they're right. gonna turn on you if you're an That's what he's saying. If you're right. an they will turn on you half.
Not just but like materialism in the 80s. He talks about it. Material Girl by Madonna. What Have You Done For Me Lately by Janet Jackson.
You gotta like, have a J-O-B.
American culture gets in your head and then they get these ideas and then suddenly his African girlfriend, Eddie, what have you done for me lately? It's just like...
Because it's the same thing. Because no matter what, you're gonna end up in the same damn spot. When you have freedom and you have the ability to choose and decide, you know, we're not a society where we have arranged marriages and all this other kind of crap. We have choice. We have freedom of choice. And if yeah. you screw that up, half.
Well, he talks about, you know, cheating and men cheating and thinking they can get away with it. And under what circumstances they can. I'm not going to do the whole bit. But he goes on to tell the story about, you know, don't worry about it. She will get back at you. It may not be right away, but someday she's going to turn to you and be like, yeah, I think I'm going to go take a trip to the Bahamas by myself. And then?
Dexter St. Jock's going to come on swinging his big old going, what's wrong with the pretty lady?
Why so sad?
Why are you so sad? Can we go? We go to my room. We talk about it. We're just going to talk. You promise?
Yeah.
Like even he says it. Women like to f*** just as much as men. Or if right. I'm going to do the clean version, women like to have sex just as much as men. Yeah, I don't know. Woman going to Bahamas, something's up. It's just going to be me and my girlfriends.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I never let you forget that too. By the way, whenever you're like Jenny's going out of town, or you know she's going out with her friends tonight, I'm always like so.
Ladies and gentlemen, so everybody knows, I am currently giving Adam, my lifelong friend, the middle finger. It, you know, everything in life continues to evolve. Art evolves. Our mentality should evolve. We as humans should be evolving in what we find funny, acceptable, whatever. We all grow. I mean, even as a kid, you know, you can watch one thing one moment and be laughing at it, and the next minute go, eh. It probably wasn't as funny, and I shouldn't be laughing at that. But if you really look at art for what it was at the time,
yeah,
and some of the hilarity that it had at the moment, Eddie Murphy had some of the funniest damn stand-up I'd ever seen. And, you know, I can't wait for him to come back.
He just like the Reebok pumps, he's making a comeback in 2021. And I just... You nailed it. I mean, you can't. We can't hold those things against him. I mean, the sentiment was wrong, obviously, but his stand-up is a time capsule, is a perfect time capsule of the mid-80s and what people thought and what life was like at the time. It was raw. It is aptly named. It's raw. It's offensive. It rubs you the wrong way.
Absolutely. And now, for everybody that's listening to this, now you can hear our raw and uncensored version on Patreon, because this is one of those episodes that you might have gotten a little tired of hearing that beeping sound.